This is Radio Health Journal. I'm Reed Pence. This week, the forced sterilization of women in our nation's past and present.
This so-called team won't let me go to the doctor to take it out because they don't want me to have any more children.
The history of forced sterilization in the U.S. when Radio Health Journal returns.
I'm Nancy Benson, host of Radio Health Journal. If you enjoy listening to Radio Health Journal, you'll also like our sister show, Viewpoints, which covers a wide array of topics from education to history to the environment. Here's a preview of what they're covering this week on Viewpoints.
Think about it for yourself. Think about a time that you were scared of something and someone told you, oh, that's nothing to worry about, just calm down. Did that make you feel better?
Probably not. We explore the art of how to successfully talk to children. Then,
we see this plane race past us, and I watched the plane aim and crash into the World Trade Center.
What were you doing the morning of September 11th, 2001? I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
Listen to Viewpoints on your favorite radio station and subscribe and listen to shows anytime on Apple Podcasts and Google Play.
To a lot of people, court hearings over the conservatorship of entertainer Britney Spears by her father amount to tabloid trash. But Spears' testimony was a stark reminder that some forms of abuse stubbornly won't go away. She claimed that her father was forcing her to use birth control, an IUD, against her will. It amounts to forced sterilization, shocking in this day and age. But in Spears' testimony in probate court last July, she says it's true.
I want to have the real deal. I want to be able to get married and have a baby. I was told right now in the conservatorship I'm not able to get married or have a baby. I have a ID inside of myself right now so I don't get pregnant. I wanted to take the ID out so I could start trying to have another baby, but this so-called team won't let me go to the doctor to take it out because they don't want me to have children, any more children.
At age 39, Spears' window of opportunity for a viable pregnancy is closing. So for her, you could argue there isn't much difference between forced use of birth control and permanent sterilization. Now, you might be scratching your head and wondering, isn't forced sterilization illegal? What many people don't realize is that in 1927, the U.S. Supreme Court sanctioned the forced sterilization of thousands of disabled, poor, and minority women without their consent. That case, called Buck v. Bell, has never been overturned.
I think even folks that maybe are not aware of this long history of forced sterilization or particularly shocked by that revelation, because it implies that there are people that are kind of controlling Britney Spears' reproductive choices. And I think in this day and age, people believe that women should have the right to make their own reproductive choices.
That's Natalie Lira, assistant professor of Latina and Latino studies and gender and women's studies at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign.
And so I think even divorced from this long history of sterilization abuse, it's a disturbing revelation. But add to that, this very long history of state-mandated sterilization that started with the eugenics movement.
Eugenics was a pseudoscience that became popular in the U.S. as an effort to implement genetic theories for the so-called good of society. The Nazis applied this same theory to its extreme during World War II.
Eugenics argued that certain social problems were caused by people who had defective traits. So they asserted that things like poverty, crime, immorality, largely the outcome of defective biology. And so by that logic, they asserted that if we could identify individuals and populations that produced these socially detrimental traits and prevented them from reproducing, then society would benefit. And so it was a science that really individualized or biologized social problems, and in the process really made reproductive control a legitimate facet of social welfare and public health.
One woman named Carrie Buck fought back. She argued that forced sterilization was cruel and unusual punishment and a violation of her Eighth Amendment rights. But in a 1927 decision, the U.S. Supreme Court wrote that, quote, "the principle that sustains compulsory vaccination is broad enough to cover cutting the fallopian tubes." Buck lost her case and was sterilized, along with thousands of other women in prisons and institutions across the country.
The Supreme Court upheld eugenic sterilization as a legitimate policy, and Oliver Wendell Holmes was a judge in that case, Buck v. Bell, in 1927, and the assertion was that it was better to end the family line than to allow that there be three generations of imbeciles. I think the direct quote is, "three generations of imbeciles is enough."
Over the years, however, the practice has been overturned in 32 states.
Disability rights organizers did a lot of work to kind of make this practice unpopular. In kind of like the mid-20th century, forced sterilization was less systematically occurring. It still occurred in public hospitals and in private settings.
For example, between 1997 and 2013, the state of California forcibly sterilized 1,400 female inmates. Court witnesses claimed it was cheaper to sterilize these women than to support their progeny on welfare. And in September 2020, 148 immigrant women detained by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement were given what Lyra calls unnecessary hysterectomies without their consent.
So I wouldn't say that this has all ended. I think we have many examples where this still happens, and it's not as systematic as it was in the era of eugenics, but we see that people who are kind of marginalized and labeled in different ways and placed in vulnerable positions continue to experience reproductive abuse of all kinds, and even the most extreme kind, which is kind of this forced sterilization. And so, yeah, folks that are familiar with this history see what's happening to Britney Spears as kind of part of this longer legacy.
Unfortunately, I don't think the Spears case is an outlier. From my experience talking to people, working with people in conservatorships and guardianships, I think the most unusual thing about her case is how much attention it's getting.
That's Zoe Brennan Crone, staff attorney at the American Civil Liberties Union's Disability Rights Program. The Americans with Disabilities Act, signed into law in 1990 by President George H.W. Bush, is much of what's at issue. The ADA gives people with disabilities the same opportunities as everyone else. However, substantially impaired people living under a conservatorship or guardianship lose their civil liberties.
There's very little data about conservatorships and guardianships nationwide, so we don't know exactly how many people have this authority, how many people use this authority, how it's being used. We don't have the hard data on it, but because it simply doesn't exist. But we know that this is something that happens, that when a person is put under, the process is called a conservatorship in California, and it's referred to in most of the rest of the country as a guardianship. But in that process, the court is taking away the rights of the person with disabilities or perceived to have disabilities and giving the rights, giving the opportunity, the power to make choices about that person to another person. That's the conservator or the guardian. And very often that includes the right to make medical decisions. And that includes the right to make decisions about reproductive freedom in a lot of cases. And it's a really huge infringement on a person's rights and identity and autonomy, and unfortunately can happen with very little oversight.
Brennan Crone contends that people under a guardianship should not lose their civil liberties and rights. She recognizes that many guardianships are supportive and loving, and that many guardians encourage the independence of their loved ones as much as possible. But that's not always the case.
It's supposed to be more of an evaluation of whether a person can make their own choices and direct their own lives. And it should be looking at that in the context of the supports that a person can have. So it doesn't really matter whether a person would struggle if they were all on their own, if in fact they have people who help them make their own decisions. They don't need to lose their autonomy in those cases. But by definition, people who are in conservatorships and guardianships are people who either have disabilities or the court is treating them as though they have disabilities. In the case of Britney Spears, I don't know whether she identifies as having disabilities, whether she perceives herself as part of the disability community, but I know that she is being treated the way she is. She's losing her rights because there's a view of her as being disabled.
Brennan Crone believes that systematically giving one person power over another creates a dangerous situation. She'd like to see a reduction in the number of conservatorships in the U.S. through the establishment of a variety of support systems to help the disabled.
Supported decision-making is one of those ways. It doesn't have to be a family member who's doing that. It can be friends. It can be support workers. Part of the idea of supported decision-making is that it's really supposed to be many people who are working with you. So there isn't just all that power in one person. And even, you know, technology can make a really big difference also in helping people live and direct their own lives. Like, most of us have apps on our smartphones that help us live our own lives, right? Like, you have an alarm clock, or you can set a reminder to tell you to lock the doors at night, or you can all sorts of just sort of like simple things that you can put into place that many of us do already, and recognize that those are ways that can support a person living their own life.
Still, the decision to establish a guardianship is often a foregone conclusion. Brennan Crone believes it should be a last resort instead.
One of the problems with the system is that often the space between conservatorship being considered and being under a conservatorship is very short and very pro forma. Like, there often isn't a real evaluation of, like, you know, what is the challenge we're trying to address here? What's going on that we're worried about as parents or as adult children or as spouses, or that we're trying to, you know, what problem are we trying to solve with conservatorship? And once that's identified, what other avenues are there? But that often sort of just gets collapsed, so isn't always really thought through. And there are a lot of alternatives in many, many cases.
Brennan Crone hopes to see the day when concerned parties consider the matter more carefully before going to court to take away someone's rights.
To say, okay, let's think about, you know, what does this person want? What do they need? Is there a reason that we think that this person can't direct their own lives? And in the case of adults, you know, I think that they're spending their money the wrong way or getting bad haircuts or drinking alcohol more than they should are not actually reasons to take away a person's civil rights, you know? And so I think really having a system where you really have to identify, here's what we think the danger is, the problem is, and really brainstorming what kinds of voluntary things. What if somebody agreed to have a joint checking account with someone they trusted, and so, or, you know, oversight in a checking account so that that person could put the brakes on if they spend more than, you know, a certain amount of money in one day and help the person talk through what they were doing. And if they choose to do that, if they can agree to that, then there's no reason to go through a court system and take away someone's rights.
According to the International Justice Resource Center, forced sterilization is a human rights violation, and yet it's still legal to enforce sterilization in the U.S. You can learn more about this topic and all our guests by visiting our website, radiohealthjournal.org. Our writer-producer this week is Polly Hansen. I'm Reed Pence.
Today's consumers are choosing foods for specific health benefits. Heart health tops the list, according to a recent study conducted by the International Food Information Council. Certain whole foods, such as grapes, which contain over 1,600 natural plant compounds, may be the key. Registered dietitian Courtney Romano is the health advisor for the California Table Grape Commission.
A heart-healthy diet is rich in whole plant-based foods. A first step is to consume more vegetables and fruit, including grapes. Fresh grapes have hundreds of naturally occurring beneficial plant compounds, including antioxidants and other polyphenols. Research indicates that adding grapes to the diet every day helps support heart health in both men and women.
Heart-healthy grapes from California are in season from May through January. Grapes of all colors, red, green, and black, are a natural source of beneficial antioxidants and other polyphenols, which contribute to heart health. Visit grapesfromcalifornia.com for more information.
Colleges and universities are trying to return to normalcy this fall. But with students living and learning in close quarters again, and the Delta variant running rampant, the risk of exposure to COVID-19 is increasing. 18 to 24-year-olds have the lowest vaccination rate of all eligible age groups in the U.S.,
and most universities are not requiring students to be vaccinated. Erica Hirsch is Vice President and General Manager of Asymptomatic Testing Solutions at Thermo Fisher Scientific.
Breakthrough infections among the vaccinated continue to occur, resulting in further viral spread and putting people at risk. This means that monitoring of community infection rates and frequent testing of all students, regardless of their vaccination status or expression of symptoms, will be imperative in providing proactive responses to any potential outbreaks at colleges and universities.
Some prominent universities in the U.S. are already mandating regular testing of all students. Find out more at thermofisher.com/COVID testing for college.
And that's Radio Health Journal for this week. Radio Health Journal is a production of MediaTracks Communications. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more. And check Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify for a library of past programs. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and information about our guests at radiohealthjournal.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.
Coming up next week on Radio Health Journal...
The horse is out of the barn once the information's been breached. So there's not a lot you can do. Like, you can't change your name or you can't change your medical history or anything like that.
Making your healthcare data more secure, because if it's breached, it's already too late.
Then why are preventable heart attacks often not prevented?
Over 75% of people got the question wrong: what causes a heart attack? Most thought that it's just about cholesterol.
All that and more on Radio Health Journal.